That really hacks me up, man. All right. Okay, welcome to our fucking pre-show, man. Our pre-show here for Wednesday. I am fucking beat, man. Because I was up this morning, had to go over for F is for Family, and then I did an audition at 11:45 down in Culver City. I was driving all over the goddamn place today. Chris Ruddy from News. Why do you keep having that motherfucker on, Lemon? Chris Ruddy is a Trump fucking surrogate, okay? That's what he is. He's not Mr. Objective. He's not even your friend, Don, okay? He thinks you're just another fucking liberal piece of shit, but he pretends that's the act he's playing. Chris Ruddy's a lying motherfucker, just like all of those right-wing news motherfuckers. He's a lying piece of shit. He slants the fucking news. His news is editorialized just like Breitbart, just like HuffPost. You know, just call it what it is, man. It's an opinion sheet. Lemon is such a simple-minded motherfucker. He gets this goddamn Chris Ruddy on there to talk about what? Just constant fucking Trump spin. Well, listen to this pig. Seriously, man, I gotta hear it what this motherfucker's saying now.
Represent Newsmax.
Bullshit.
I do support the president.
You're a newsman.
Rudy is probably giving him good advice generally.
Sure.
Certainly he's helped him during the legal issues he's had with the Mueller investigation.
Uh-huh.
Appears to have gone his way in a very strong way.
Mm-hmm. No, it didn't.
You know, again, I would say that for the Democrats.
Yeah, of course.
Really, it's a bad day for all of us in America.
Oh, my goodness.
Here we are in the middle of United Nations Week.
Uh-huh.
The president's trying to show a unified nation.
Yeah. I like how you skipped over what Lemon just said to you. You know what, Lemon? I actually admire you now, man. Okay, you held his fucking feet to the fire. Jesus, what a fucking piece of shit. It didn't rise to the level, didn't say it exonerated him of a crime, so Ruddy skips over that one and says, I think today was a bad day for the president, but it was a bad day for the Democrats, it was a bad day for the... Here we are in the middle of the... And the president's doing, fuck you, Ruddy. God, I hate motherfuckers like that. Motherfucking right wing in this goddamn country hates liberals so fucking much. I mean, hates liberals, hates all the way back to fucking Kennedy and beyond so fucking much. They'd rather take democracy out of the equation, just turn this fucking thing into a roiling fucking dictatorship, so long as they got their guy at the top. So they get this fat fucking piece of shit Trump, who's so goddamn fucking stupid, it breaks all records. They think he's a genius. This motherfucker makes it up as he goes. He can't do shit. He hasn't got control over the so-called trade war. This motherfucker doesn't know which way he's going that fucking trade war. He's dumping $30 billion into the fucking farmers now. These motherfucking Republicans were worried about a goddamn debt. Now they got more fucking debt than they ever seen in their lives, and all of a sudden they don't give a shit. Fuck you guys. All of you. All of you motherfuckers. Now they don't give a fuck about the debt. Now they're jacking that motherfucker through the goddamn ceiling. If the black guy was still in there, all these white motherfuckers would be screaming about this shit. I don't represent the president. I'm just, you know. So that's why we're going to do an impeachment roundtable here, hosted by Jay Sanos. There you go. Steve Bozell will call in and say what? He's going to say what?
Well, you know, my feeling is very, my feeling's very strong. I feel strongly on this. I just, Jesse, 1-2-3, 1-2-3, 1-2-3, 1-2-3. You know, I feel very strongly on this. I always have felt so deeply strong, you know, but just 1-2. And,
today was a bad day for the president. Here we go. Bullshit, you fucking piece of shit. No, it doesn't, motherfucker. Shut up, Ruddy. This is where Lemon's such a weak ass. Oh, my God. I think this guy, Ruddy, is just a by-the-book fucking Trump surrogate. Fuck him. Just a by-the-book Trump. There's not an original thought in that piece of shit's mind. There's not a piece of news that guy's ready to break. He's on Newsmax side. He supports the president. He's a fucking Trump surrogate. And every goddamn time that piece of shit's on TV, he hears from Donald Trump. Don't worry. Donald Trump is on the horn talking to him and, you know, patting him and promising him blowjobs or whatever. You know, good job. Oh, I can't. I fucking hate that motherfucker. I hate all of them. I do. I'm just having a bad day, you know, I'm really tired. But I, you know, on my bad days, I hate these motherfuckers with a goddamn passion. Every last one of them. Every last white, lily white piece of shit one of them. Am I a white guy? Yes, I am. That's why I know them so fucking well. I know white people better than, you know. You want to find out about white? Ask a white guy. Ask an honest white guy. I'll tell you all about it. They're lying motherfuckers. Yeah, they're racists. Give me a fucking break. I listen to these motherfuckers talking, but there's no people of color around, man. Yeah, they're fucking racist all the time, dropping N-word this, talking about, hey, look at her, look at this. You know, every time you see somebody of color, there's a whole different mindset that happens. The conversation takes a certain spin. It takes a certain, it gets on a certain track. Don't fucking bullshit me. God damn it, it fucking pisses me off. It really fucking does, man. So I think it's one of the reasons why I got out of radio ultimately, and what I really would like to just get out of the whole fucking idea of daily commentary, because it's enough to just make you flip your fucking lid, man. Okay, so Margaret Gray. Margaret, how you feeling?
Well, Jay, thank you. I'm feeling much, much better. I did want to call in because I want to let everyone know that I will be back. But yes, I've Phil had the croup that he picked up there in Dubai. Okay, and I got a little bit of that.
Yeah, well, I understand. I heard that you did, and so I want to make sure
that you're doing okay.
You wanted to
what?
I wanted to make sure I was on the phone there. Excuse me. Thomas Jefferson's coming home. And have you guys seen Hamilton? Have you listened to the Hamilton soundtrack? It's amazing. It really is. It's a great, great soundtrack. It's a great, great play. It's historically drawn from the Ron Chernow autobiography, which I read, which is historically a very, very profound and accurate telling of the life of Alexander Hamilton. Even people that don't particularly like Hamilton, because he's the guy, he's kind of a liberal, and they're all Thomas Jefferson people. Half the people that love Thomas Jefferson don't fucking know why. They just do, because he wrote the Declaration of Independence, right? That's about the only... Let me clue you in about Thomas Jefferson. That's the only goddamn thing Thomas Jefferson did with his motherfucking life that was consistent and made sense. His presidency was about as regal and royal a fucking presidency as any other fucking cocksucker that lived in that house. He was the third president of the United States, and he was he was a fucking king, man. Now, I'm not saying he was an asshole. He wasn't Trump, but he sure used the powers of that fucking office to the fucking max. Mr. States' Rights, Mr. We should be a pastoral farming society. We don't need all of that European manufacturing. Mr. We don't want centralized government. We want to give the power back to the states. That Thomas Jefferson. Fuck him. Anyway, he's featured in this play. Everybody's featured very prominently, very positively, as well they should. They're our founders. But it's about Hamilton and his life. And the reason why it's an interesting thing is because Thomas Hamilton, or should I say Alexander Jefferson? No, Alexander Hamilton was born in the West Indies to a Scottish father, I believe, and an Irish, or excuse me, and a French mother. Maybe it was the other way around. But was orphaned at the age of 12. His father had left. His mother died when he was 12 years old. And he was raised fortunately, by a benevolent people in the islands there who eventually sent him to the United States, sent him up to the new country, to the colonies, I should say, the British colonies, to get an education, because he was an exceptional kid. He was very, very bright. He was very much interested in numbers and figures. He carried with him, I think it's a book called The Economies of the World. I may be wrong. Maybe it hadn't been written yet. It was something like that. And it told of all kinds of magical and wonderful things having to do with economics and money. One of them being the speed with which money circulates in society. All of these things were fascinating to him, Alexander Hamilton. And he was a brilliant guy. He was one of those guys that, he had an ego, but it wasn't like he thought he was great. He just thought, I got a better idea. You guys have got to listen to me because I know how we can do this. So he pissed off a lot of people when he did that. His best friend probably in the world was George Washington. They were very close, 20-year age difference. Washington was much older than him. And yet they were friends. And they fought in the Revolutionary War together. Alexander Hamilton was the aide-de-camp to George Washington. He was his chief of staff for the most part during the war, and really wanted to get into the fight. He wanted to be an infantryman. He wanted to be a fighting officer in the Continental Army. And Washington would, you're too valuable to me. I'm not going to let you do that. He wrote, one of the things that Hamilton did is he wrote all the letters to Continental Congress. And he was great at writing these letters and requesting monies and requesting equipment. And we need this, we need that, and here's what's going on. He was brilliant, and Washington used him for those very reasons. But Hamilton wanted to be a soldier. And he had been a soldier at the outbreak of the war. He commanded an artillery unit in New York. Eventually, they got into an argument, and there's a very interesting passage in the book where Alexander Hamilton is having a particularly persnickety and pissed off day, and he's coming down the steps very, very rapidly in this house that the army has, taken over as a command post of some kind, and Washington's going up the steps, and Hamilton just brushes right by him. And George Washington, if you haven't guessed, you probably know, it was not the kind of guy that you just blew past. I mean, he was a hard ass, and he turned around and he said in, pretty frank terms, "Hey, Charlie, you salute a superior officer. What the fuck do you think you're doing?" Just some words to that effect. Hamilton turned around, saluted him, but told him in that instance, "says, I don't know what the hell I'm doing here. You know, and you're going to send me home to my wife and to my kids, and I had to be in this fight here, and all I want to do is have a piece of some of this fighting that's going on, blah, blah, blah." So finally, Washington said, "Okay." And he let him command an artillery unit there in Yorktown. And Hamilton acquitted himself bravely, was decorated, so were his men. They took one of the British redoubts, very, very pivotal, one of the significant redouts where the British were, which is like a dugout, or if you will, trenches. They jumped into that trench and took this without, I don't know if any shots were fired, and they made a run through the dark. Hamilton at the lead with a saber, which is how they did it in those days. And his entire unit just jumped these British when they least expected it, and they took over this section of the British trench works, which was extremely, it was an extremely vital area that opened up things much, much more for the Continentals. And then if you watch Hamilton, they also talk about Hercules Mulligan. He was a barber, and he was a tailor, I think, in New York City, who was tight with a lot of these British officers. He learned a lot of intelligence, and he passed it on to Washington. Hercules Mulligan was one of the great unsung heroes of the Revolutionary War, and it was because of him that they knew when the British were going to be moving their ships into, I think, Chesapeake Bay, and that was interdicted by the French, so they didn't get any naval support. Hercules Mulligan brought the information, or gave the information to Washington. Washington was able to transmit to the French where we needed their ships to be. And Yorktown was a massive victory. And if you watch the play or you listen to the music, there's a song they sing called "The World Is Turned Upside Down." And you think about it, that's really what happened. The world was turned upside down. The colonists, the monarchy, one of the biggest monarchies in the history of the world, had been defeated by these, people, these everyday common people. So, but Hamilton was a scrupulously honest man. How do I know? He died broke. Yeah. Nothing will tell you more about a man's honesty than how he, did he die broke or did, I'm not saying guys that die with money are not honest, but Alexander Hamilton died, and you know how he died. He died in a duel with Aaron Burr. We could go through a whole big thing. They deal with that in the musical really poignantly and brilliantly. They do a little kind of artistic license in reading what was the relationship between Hamilton and Burr, and they make it rather poetic and rather significant. They feel that the two men's careers kind of tracked along parallel lines. Maybe they did, maybe they didn't. But Alexander Hamilton died, and Eliza, his wife, who turned out to be really a remarkable woman, she lived another 50 years, as they say in the musical, and she wound up in Washington, D.C. with her daughter, and she became the toast of the town in the 1850s. She became, my God, everybody beat a path to the door of Eliza Hamilton because she was married to what they called in those days, one of the fathers. And she was interviewed, and she was feted at parties, and everybody came to see her, the President of the United States, everybody. Eliza Hamilton went before the Congress after Alexander Hamilton died and said, "My husband was a Revolutionary War veteran. He did not take his pension." Hamilton would not take his pension because he did not feel it was serving the American people, that he was working for them and at the same time getting this sort of extra remuneration from the government. I mean, he was working for a salary, but he didn't think it was fair to the American people that he was also collecting his pension, so he didn't take his pension. Nowadays, we don't even recognize that kind of thing. Of course we take our pension, But he didn't do that, and so throughout his life, it was just sitting there. She went to the Congress, and she said, "His family, me and his children, were suffering because they were broke. They almost had to sell their home, The Grange, which is in uptown New York. Back in those days, that was all very rural. And they had their home there. It was like a farmhouse. And I believe it's still there. It's a historical landmark, blah, blah, blah. But she said, we're entitled to that money. And to her great benefit, the Congress listened to her and they said, yes, you are. And they gave her Colonel Hamilton's pension. So what happened to me after I read that book, I got so, like, I became such a fan of Alexander Hamilton, man. The fact that this guy was an immigrant, the fact this guy was such a fucking patriot, the fact that this guy loved this country so much, took great care in everything that he did. Yes, we can talk about the affair that he had while Eliza and the kids were upstate with a woman named Maria Reynolds, but let's not right now. He did. But however, his ideas were for the Treasury Department, for the how we were going to pay for the war debt. He was very much in favor of a national bank, getting credit, helping the country build, etc. And that ran him up against Jefferson and Madison and all those other fucking brain surgeons who later, after Hamilton died, had to admit, you know, Hamilton knew what he, Hamilton knew what he was talking about. Thomas Jefferson hated Alexander Hamilton's guts. And after Hamilton died and Jefferson became president, he told his secretary of the Treasury, Jefferson's, and I don't know who it was, Pinckney? I could be Walcott, I forget who. He said, I want an audit done of the Treasury Department because I'm going to find out every fucking dime that motherfucker stole. So they went in and they did a full audit. And they came out and they said, not only did he not steal, this is a fact, not only did he not steal, but it's an exemplary working department, and this should be the matrix. This should be the blueprint for the way the Treasury Department operates from here on out. And to this day, it exists. I mean, I'm sure there have been some adjustments made in how business is done, but for the most part, the Treasury Department that Alexander Hamilton set up is the one we have today in the United States. And that was Thomas Jefferson's Treasury Secretary who told Jefferson that. He said, this is not only was this man honest, but he ran one holy hell of a great goddamn department. And James Madison said the same thing. So, again, you know, he was so fucking honest, he died broke. And then there was, and of course, his honesty, his sense of moral purpose, what do you want, his standards, whatever, got him killed, really, because there's a song that keeps repeating throughout the play, I'm not throwing away my shot. When Alexander Hamilton was in the duel with Aaron Burr, the rumor has it that he threw his shot away, meaning you raise up your pistol and you fire at the branches in the trees, which is to say to your opponent, I'm not interested in killing you. I we're here. Your honor's been satisfied. I showed up. I'm going to shoot under the trees, and I don't want to kill you. And we'll work this shit out. And the hope is your opponent will do the same thing. Your opponent is not compelled to do that. Your opponent can go ahead and bang, put a shot right in you. And that's exactly what Aaron Burr did. The play envisions a Burr who is suddenly overcome with guilt and sees that Alexander Hamilton was a comrade and sees that they were both young men, young attorneys in a new land and a new nation. And they should have been brothers and they weren't. And they should have. The song is "The World Was Wide Enough for Both of Us." Is the song that Alexander Hamilton sings in this. He says, I should have seen that the world was big enough for the two of us. But in reality, Aaron Burr shot Alexander Hamilton, went across the river and had himself a drink. And really didn't think too much more about it. At least he doesn't record any really terribly heartfelt feelings about it. He did what he had to do. His honor was offended. He protected his honor. He killed Alexander Hamilton. Fuck you and the horse you rode in on. Gets in the boat, goes across the fucking, whatever it is. Not the East River. What is it? What's the name of the river there? Forgive me, I'm not that familiar with the rivers around New York, and I guess I should be. But he went back to New York, had himself a drink, and went about his business. And it was only by nightfall in New York where the city, the news was reverberating throughout the city that the city was wearing black. People were in absolute mourning by that evening in the city of New York. And Burr suddenly is sort of, you know, noticing that this is like, you know, these people really loved him. And the whole fucking city, and Burr had to get the hell out of town. He felt like he needed to get out of town, and he did. And years later, Aaron Burr sort of went into a... He was arrested for treason because it was suspected he was trying to set up an independent empire, an independent state of some kind in the American Southwest that was going to be comprised in part of sections of Mexico, which the U.S. government was like, what the fuck do you think you're doing? You're going to put us into a fucking war with the Mexicans? And Burr was thinking, well, you're headed to a war with them anyway. And I suppose he was right, but be that as it may, he got off... You know, he got out by the hair of his chinny chin chin on that motherfucker until he finds himself in Europe. I mean, he's in exile. He's exiled. He can't walk the streets of America, man. People are going to kick his fucking ass. And as it turned out, I don't know where he was, London or Paris. He's walking down the street and there's a Yank coming up the street who recognizes him. Well, you motherfucker took his cane and started. He got assaulted on the streets of Europe by a fellow American who recognized him. Such was Aaron Burr's life. And Aaron Burr, you know, sort of died in a rather undistinguished man. And he should have been more distinguished. He was vice president of the United States at one point. He was the senator from New York. He had a career. He was a veteran of the Revolutionary War. He had been a Continental Army infantryman. He killed a lot of British. He was not a shrinking violet. And yet he did not have much, according to the musical, he didn't have much of a reputation as a shot among his men. Hamilton did. I don't know. Hamilton was seen fiddling with the trigger, wearing his glasses on the day of the duel. And that, according to the musical, gave Burr pause, saying, if he's got his fucking glasses on, he wants to kill me. However, like I said, you know, they think he threw his shot away. Anyway, there's your little history of Alexander Hamilton. Go see the play, the musical, if it comes into your town, because it's performed by an entire cast of people of color, actors and actresses of color. Lin-Manuel Miranda is the author of the music. He's brilliant. He's fucking brilliant. He plays Alexander Hamilton. All of the actors are black, I think, with the exception of King George. And I think that that's a touch that is because these young artists, these young black and Hispanic artists, find a way to identify with the story of America, the founding of America, and the story of America's founders. They find someone and something to identify with. Hamilton, this immigrant, and the other immigrants, Lafayette. There were a lot of them that helped us win that war. And it resonates. You know, you see them and you can tell the cast that's assembled and the and Mr. Miranda himself, that yeah, this has great meaning for them, you know, and I'm happy to watch it. I think it's fantastic. I think if you say it's taking a liberties with history, no, it isn't. It's not history. They didn't jump around and sing, so that's not a fucking historically. It's accurate in terms of dates and events. Yes, it's not accurate in that they didn't jump around singing songs and they were all black. Okay, however, when it comes to our country and all of us together as a country of black, white, Hispanic, and the fact that so many stories of black soldiers in the Revolutionary War, in the Civil War, and other wars were not told, that their stories were buried, and it was all about white people, there's finally a little bit of vindication there, because there were black soldiers from Rhode Island, from South Carolina, and in the Revolutionary War. There were black soldiers in all of our wars. And in the play, in the musical, they make a point of saying when Yorktown was over and the dead were there out on the field, black and white soldiers dead on the field at Yorktown as the British surrender and single file their asses out of Yorktown. And there's this wild celebration breaks out and the song, The World Turned Upside Down. Now, there's another song they talk about. I can't remember, but they say, you know, that... during the debate about whether it's going to be a central bank or whether all of the states have to assume their own debt from the war, Virginia is saying, hey, listen, we're doing good, man. We plant seeds. We grow crops. You know, we save our money. We're good. And Hamilton turns around and says, you don't plant those fucking seeds. You got slave labor, motherfuckers. That's why you're doing good. You got free labor? Sure. Anyway, read Ron Gershow's book, Alexander Hamilton. If you don't like to read books, go ahead and see the musical Hamilton if it comes into your town, because it's I listen to it. Every beat is historic. It's chronologic. All of the major points in Hamilton's life are hit. His affair with this Maria Reynolds is really interesting. This is Alexander Hamlin. He has an affair with this chick. Her husband finds out, and Hamlin starts paying this guy off. Some 6 or 7 years later, Hamlin is in his office by three congressmen who are saying, we believe there's been some fiduciary irregularity. We believe that there's a man named Reynolds, and have you been, you know. And they thought that Hamilton was beholden to this guy Reynolds from the public funds. Somehow he was blackmailing the United States Treasury. And Hamilton said, I'm going to tell you the truth. It's not going to redound well for me, but I'm going to tell you the truth so you know that I have not been using public money. I had an affair with that guy's wife. I paid her with my own personal money. Here are the books. Take a look. You can see all of the T's are crossed, all the I's dotted. I did not use public money. So, and he asked him, he said, I would appreciate it if you guys wouldn't go public. And I think they promised him that they wouldn't. And that promise sort of just kind of, well, you know how those kinds of promises go. Somebody told someone and, you know, it got out. But Hamilton, being such a fucking naive guy, he said, if you guys don't say anything, I'll tell you what that was about. That was not public money. That was my money. I paid this woman's husband off not to say anything. And he even published a pamphlet. It's called The Reynolds Pamphlet. And in the play, in the musical, Eliza is humiliated, as, you know, you would imagine she is. And she doesn't want to talk to him ever again as long as she fucking lives and this and that and this and that. And all of that bad feeling, all that bitterness, all of that comes to an end when their son, Philip, their firstborn, their eldest, he dies in a duel before his father does. He dies in a duel. They lose their 19-year-old son. And that is such a crushing thing for the two of them that they rebond. And it's something, man. I'm telling you, it's really something. The story of Alexander Hamilton is really fucking something. It's really human. It's all that shit. I'm Phil Hendry. All right. Now,
Jay Santa, Citizens Auxiliary, I just want to make sure I got music right. God damn it to fucking hell. God damn it to fucking hell.
Testing 1, 2. This... this is Jay Santos, Impeachment Roundtable, with the Citizens Auxiliary Police, Brigadier Admiral Jay Santos.
I'm Jay Santos, and welcome to Impeachment Roundtable. As you know, as you heard yesterday, President Donald Trump is going to be impeached. And,
it's called impeached, you know, not to...
I understand it, and you just heard General Shaw butt in and stick his nose in and butt in. God damn, dude. Shut your fucking hole.
My hole?